And you're listening to Central Time. I'm Noah Ovshinsky in for Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. One of the most important things about being from Wisconsin is the way we talk. The Upper Midwest accent is recognized nationwide and allows Wisconsinites to be identified immediately.
But what is the Wisconsin accent, or accents, I should say, and how did they come about? We're talking about it with, well, I can only call him an expert in linguistics right now. He's sitting right next to me.
And we're curious about what you think the Wisconsin dialect is. What expressions or pronunciations stand out to you as distinctly Midwestern, maybe distinctly Wisconsin? Call 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Here to explain what the Wisconsin dialect is and perhaps what it isn't and how it came about is Joseph Sammons, co-editor of Wisconsin Talk, Linguistic Diversity in the Badger State. Joe, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much. I'm really happy to be here.
It's good to see you. So let's start with the basics. I'm going to throw you a softball here. What is the Wisconsin accent?
That's a softball? Well, there's not a single Wisconsin accent, first of all. And it's not something that's fixed in time. It's actually happening right now. It's developing. It's getting becoming much different, getting much stronger in some ways. People from Sheboygan and Manitowoc sound very different from people in Milwaukee, and they sound very different from people in Eau Claire and La Crosse. So there's a set of accents. There's nothing – linguistic features don't start and stop at state lines. So there aren't really particular features that are found only in Wisconsin, not in the Upper Peninsula, not in Minnesota and so forth. But there's a cluster of features that together are enough to identify people from various parts of the state.
So you say that Wisconsin is one of the most linguistically interesting places in North America.
Absolutely.
What's so special about us?
It's the range of things that are happening here over time, how things are developing and changing. I'm from the South, as you'll hear eventually in my voice. And in the South, there are what some people call professional Southerners, people who make a living using a Southern accent and doing sort of a Southern shtick. We don't exactly have that so much in the Upper Midwest. There are a few people like that. But we've got this rapidly evolving, distinct English that people are starting to recognize. And really only in the last couple of decades that you have things associated with the Upper Midwest that are so linguistically recognizable. And that's because really clearly distinct Wisconsin English accents have only come about in the last generation or two.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you talk about a generation or two. You talk about language evolving. Well, if we're evolving, where did we start?
Well, obviously the native languages of Wisconsin are where it all starts, still spoken today, huge and really exciting efforts going into revitalizing these languages, having children learn to speak them as a first language or along with English. But then English comes into the state. I mean, French has some role, but English comes in as the first massive outside presence. And that's quickly joined by a whole bunch of immigrant languages, German, Polish, Norwegian, and so forth in large numbers. And together, this think about it. People who came here speaking English were from, say, New England or Pennsylvania, and they brought that kind of English. They came directly from Ireland. They came from England. They brought that kind of English with them. Their kids didn't grow up with just that particular accent, just that particular dialect, just that particular immigrant language. They heard all these different things going on around them. What kids do ultimately is build a grammar out of what they hear, how they hear people talk, how their peers talk, how they're going to do things. They make decisions about that, mostly unconscious, sometimes conscious. And those kids started to shape a new way of speaking that it was not found anywhere else and that reflected local patterns in remarkably rich ways.
How many generations are we talking about here? How quickly does it happen?
It takes at least three generations to develop a new dialect or a new language in those kinds of situations. Here, it's a lot slower because We think of 19th century, early 20th century immigrants coming in. And the stereotype is that they very quickly learned to speak English and gave up those languages. In fact, they didn't. Our research has shown that sometimes German-speaking immigrants to the state remained German monolingual. That is, they didn't learn to speak English for two or three generations. So you have third-generation Wisconsinites who only speak German. And so the process doesn't start for them until they start learning to speak English.
So because language is so wrapped up in culture and it was hard to let it go.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about the importance of kids and in the development of dialects. Now, and you talked briefly about Native Americans and the tribes here in Wisconsin. Of course, unfortunately, there is a history here in the state where kids who spoke their native languages were placed in boarding houses. You know, it happened across the country, including here in Wisconsin. They were taken out of their family unit and placed in a school where English was not only spoken but I would say promoted.
Well, where they were often physically punished for speaking their native language.
How did that affect the evolution of native languages and how that affects the dialect or dialects here in Wisconsin?
Well, people had different reactions to that kind of trauma of the boarding schools. A lot of people came back and would not speak their native languages. They learned English. They used English. They used English with their own children because they didn't want them to have those problems. There are cases throughout the country. You rightly say that this is a national issue. There are cases throughout the country of people who came back and said, well, no, I'm not going to change. I'm still going to speak the language that I speak. But you have English established. It really pushes the native languages in those communities to the margins because you have broken that chain of normal transmission. That's why there's so much effort underway today to revitalize Ho-Chunk, to revitalize Menominee and Potawatomi and so forth, to reestablish those kinds of traditions. But at the same time, you have English that is distinct in those communities so that people can use a few words of Menominee, a few words of Oneida, and identify themselves as part of the community and have distinct English accents.
Mm-hmm. Before we take a break, I just want to talk a little bit more also about, mainstream dialects, I suppose, here in Wisconsin. What are some of the sort of what are some examples of I'll call them Wisconsinisms? I don't know. Am I making that up? Is that a word?
Oh, is it a word? We can make new words. We make new words all the time.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's go with it. So before we break here, give me some example of some Wisconsinisms.
Well, in pronunciation, one of the things that when people from Wisconsin go outside the state, they often find people commenting on is how they pronounce the A sound before a G sound. So a word like bag is something that outsiders notice. I confess that I noticed it when I came here and heard people go to the store and you buy something and somebody says, you want to beg for that? So that's typical of most of the state as a whole. Typical of the western part of the state is that the vowels in a word like cot, meaning the thing that company sleeps on, and caught, the past tense of to catch, are pronounced the same. That's coming in from the West pretty rapidly. There are lots of other things that are historically part of Wisconsin and other regions as well. The what we call stopping, so the TH sounds not being pronounced as th and the, but as duh, dim der does type things. There's a long list of them. And that's just the ones from sound. There are things in grammar. There are things in vocabulary that are used here. Golden birthday is something that a lot of people outside of Wisconsin don't know, but it seems like most people in Wisconsin do know about it.
The thing, too, I'm sort of a recent migrant to Wisconsin, and of course there are several things that I had no idea what they were until somebody pointed them out, bubbler being one, for a water fountain. People are using the word bakery as not just a place but actually a thing. The things that you can buy in a bakery, like, oh, the bakery's in the kitchen. Well, no. I mean, to me, it's like, well, the bakery's actually down the street. It's not in the kitchen. What's up with that?
Well, it's a case where some of the immigrant languages to Wisconsin have a word that looks a little bit like bakery that means baked goods. But it's also not uncommon for names for things and places where those things are housed to flip flop. So there are lots of different things going on in cases like that.
We are talking to Joseph Sammons, co-editor of Wisconsin Talk, Linguistic Diversity in the Badger State.
And we want to know what you think about the Wisconsin dialect. What are your favorite Wisconsin expressions, Wisconsinisms, and figures of speech? You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. We'll take your calls and hear some examples in just a bit. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Noah Ovshinsky, and this is Central Time.
You guys coming with or no? Right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You guys have supper or no?
A clip there of one of the famous Wisconsinisms that we're going to hear more about in just a moment as we pick up our discussion with Joseph Salmons, co-editor of Wisconsin Talk.
So, there it is. You heard it. There it is.
Brilliant example from Rob Brackenridge, the comedian.
So you say we're evolving. And yep. Before we go to the phones, I just want to really very quickly. You say we're evolving. Where do you see our language going?
Probably going to surprise you with this answer. It's going to become more regionally diverse and not less regionally diverse. People are going to have stronger regional accents over the next couple of generations than they have now. And we've got really good evidence from that. We have recordings made in part by this organization, Wisconsin Public Radio, back from the 30s and so forth. And you play those for people here and you ask them, where are those people from? And they can't tell. They don't have a distinct accent. But if you go to Sheboygan or Manitowoc today, you go to La Crosse or Eau Claire, you hear young people talk, and they sound very regionally distinct. It's happening, and we can measure that acoustically. We can look at the physics of speech and see that going on and quantify it. So it's going to be more distinct, and it's going to continue in the directions that things are already headed. What the basic regions are is probably going to continue with more differentiation, in many ways, accents are going to get stronger. It doesn't mean all features are going to survive. So dim, dare, doze, for example, is relatively recessive. It's less commonly used than it might have been two generations ago. But while some features like that are fading, and er, no, is probably fading, lots of other features are stepping up. So the overall pattern of diversity is going to increase.
All right. So we're talking about patterns and science and looking at it acoustically. Well, let's go to the phones. Let's talk about people's own personal experience with the Wisconsin accent. Our first caller is Eugene. Eugene, you notice accents were the same N and S of the Valley?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I live here in a little village of Biola. It's the Kickapoo Valley. The valley starts up at Wilton and goes south to where the Kickapoo empties into the Wisconsin down to Waseca. Now, it isn't. I don't think it's as pronounced as it used to this when I was a kid growing up here. But if you went 20 miles west, you'd pick up a different accent because you get over into the Norwegian area around Westby and around Viroqua. Now here, it isn't pronounced. Now, I can catch it in some of the older people. Their language is a little bit slower and also a little bit deeper.
Joe, have you seen
their way of speaking?
Joe, have you seen the speed change as well?
Yeah, this is a very interesting part of the state with regard to that. The southwestern corner of the state, where the boundaries are, has changed over time, and it's not always completely clear. That's been a very distinct area for a long time because, exactly as the caller says, the settlement patterns have been different. The early Anglo settlements were in southwestern Wisconsin, so you have a very established, longer established pattern there. You have Norwegians, especially west and north of that area, and they're actually major dialect boundaries. You can basically bicycle from Mount Horeb to Mineral Point and hear the accents change as you go. Even today, it's certainly truer among older speakers, but it's still there today. And that southwestern corner is much more like Midlands English, like the English of parts of Iowa, northern Illinois, and so forth.
So within a bike ride's distance, dialects can be different.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's amazing. Eugene, thanks so much for your call. Elaine from La Crosse, do you have a Wisconsinism you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, one word that I use and my mother used and we use in our family is the word putsy, means, you know, not complicated, but just has a lot of steps to complete it, like a recipe or something could be, it's not hard, it's putsy. And so when my daughter moved to Boston for college, she used that word to describe something, and the people there had no idea what she was talking about, putsy. So I didn't know if you had any history or could explain how that came about or where that came from.
I don't know that one. I've heard it, but I don't remember anything about it. But I can tell you exactly how to find out. Go to the Dictionary of American Regional English. I'll guarantee you it's in there. And if it's not, we can talk to the editors and find out. They must have data on that.
Let's go to Madison. Penny, you have a pronunciation for, well, what I say mayonnaise. How about you?
Mayonnaise with a Y, mayonnaise.
These are pretty common differences regionally, where we have more reduced pronunciations and less reduced pronunciations. One of the classic examples that you hear a lot for that is the little sticks that kids use for coloring. Do you say crayon or crayon, or what do you say?
I say crayon.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm a crayon man myself.
Okay. I grew up with crayons.
So we talked a little bit about Southwest Wisconsin, and I noticed we've got one that I think, at least I've heard it, I've heard this word sound like this in Southwest Wisconsin. Barb, you've got a word there from Oconomowoc.
Yes, I grew up in Watertown, which is German in background. I always say wash instead of wash.
Oh, really interesting example. This is one of the things that I never expected to hear in Wisconsin. It's absolutely classic for, again, this Midlands area, sort of central Illinois, central Indiana, parts of Ohio and so forth. And it has crept up into Wisconsin. I guess at this point, I'm not shocked to hear that you can get it in Watertown, but I've mostly heard it from southern, across really southern Wisconsin, Rock County and places like that. The story, the usual story is that there's a part of the South where people did pronounce R's at the ends of words and didn't pronounce R's at the ends of words, so that you get the park the car type pronunciations and park the car pronunciations. And where you have that situation, people will sometimes overcompensate. They'll think there's an R where there isn't one. And the story is, I don't know if it's true or not, but the story is that people did that in the case of wash and started producing wash. And it's very well established in the Midlands, and it has crept up into southern Wisconsin.
I want to just take one or two more calls here before we have to end the interview. Real quick, Evelyn from Nina, you think people can recognize the Wisconsin accent very clearly across the country?
Oh, yes. My husband and I were in D.C. recently, and as we were standing at the corner discussing where we're going next, this gal was behind us, and I thought, oh, she's waiting for something. Then she came up to us and said, "You're either from Wisconsin or Minnesota." And it's so wonderful to hear that accent. And also, I want to comment on, in the fall of the year, when the hunters come on, they say dis, das, dos, and dems. And it just irritates me that they cannot pronounce a TH. I don't know if it's from the valley here. I'm from Nina. If it's just their way of talking, that they're excited to be on television or what.
So is it a Wisconsin thing, or what is it?
It's certainly a Wisconsin thing. It's a Wisconsin thing. The dim, dare, dos is something that adults who were trying to learn English, who were native speakers of, say, Polish or Yiddish or German, almost any other language, had great difficulty producing. So they just substituted Ds for those sounds, and it stuck around. The thing is, it came in as this immigrant feature, but the caller is exactly right. We've been going around the state for several years now and talking to people about how they perceive speech in Wisconsin. And she said exactly what a lot of people say. Oh, this is how deer hunters talk. So it's gone from being something about having immigrant background to being something that's about a social group. And it's often characterized as rural as opposed to urban and so forth. So, yeah, that's absolutely absolutely there.
And I've been to one or two deer camps in my life, and I have to say linguistically things go downhill very quickly.
Well, downhill for you, I would say, as a linguist, it's uphill. It gets much more interesting.
Before we run out of time, one last question for you. Are there any words that we're exporting to the rest of the country where, you know, if you're on the East Coast or West Coast, you'll hear a word that maybe we originated here in Wisconsin?
There are a couple of things like that. One, I think when I was a kid growing up, brat in the sense of bratwurst was not something that I knew. That was not part of my vocabulary. But I think everybody in the country, I can go anywhere and talk about brats and people know what I mean. There's something else that is a little bit more of a structural grammatical feature that's spreading very rapidly, and it has deep roots here in Wisconsin. And that is, Rob Brackenridge did it in the clip you played. Going to the store, you want to come with. To me, it has to be, do you want to come along or do you want to come with us or something like that? But up here, it's come with. And that, again, is because a lot of the immigrant languages that were well represented in Wisconsin had that as a construction. And it's just been sort of translated in to English. It's spreading very rapidly now, and you can hear it in most of the country, and it's certainly unsurprising to people. People don't regard that as very foreign. So, yeah, Wisconsin stuff is popular.
We talked about migration early, 100-plus years ago, but there's also recent migration.
Yes.
How is that, very quickly, how is that affecting dialects here in Wisconsin now, the recent migrations to the state?
Much less than earlier migrations. We'll take words from these situations as cultures come into contact and we pick up new foods or cultural traditions or something. But we now have a pretty fixed Wisconsin starting point for English, and people are buying into that, and it's developing. But it's not going to be reshaped the way it's just been shaped.
Joe, thanks for coming in today.
Happy to do it.
That was Joseph Sammons, co-editor of Wisconsin Talk, Linguistic Diversity in the Badger State.
And coming up, we're going to talk about the preservation of comic books. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Noah Ovshinsky. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.